I'm Jayla, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Welcome. Oh, we will begin with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask our guests, especially those representing the press or broadcasting media, to protect the anonymity of all present here today. We request you eliminate the mention of any names in reference to Overeaters Anonymous and that no pictures be taken. This workshop is being recorded and will not be edited. If you wish to remain anonymous, you may use a fictitious name. Two Hatters, OA members who are affiliated with other anonymous programs, are requested to speak only of their is this for all of us? Okay. Are requested to speak only of their personal recovery in OA to avoid implying endorsement of an outside enterprise. Janice has been willing to be our timer. I will speak for 20 minutes. And the topic of our session is not No More Drama Queen. That's in the other room. It is editing the final cut, turning character defects into assets. We will focus on recognizing character defects, 10th step work around those, and how the process supports living life on life's terms and recovery work. Well, let me tell you, when I got sent this topic, it's been a while since I've been to a convention. But it seems to me in the olden days when I used to speak at conventions, the topics were recovery or serenity or step one. They were not half a page long. And I really felt inadequate about doing this. And so I started talking to everyone I know in recovery, my program friends, those I sponsor, those who sponsor me, anyone who happened to bump into me. Oh, how are you working on your character defects? So thank goodness I have something to say. So I've been in the program 25 years. Thank you, God. I always kept coming back. I have 6 years of continuous abstinence from compulsive overeating for the first time in that time period. I hope it won't take you that long to get abstinent and stay abstinent. But I certainly, in the 6 years that I've been staying continuously out of compulsive overeating, I have gotten intimately acquainted with my character defects for the first time. I was such a people pleaser in my life, and I was so worried about being emotional caretaker of the world and just taking care of everybody I met and was in relationship with, doing whatever it took for them to like me and not to feel bad, that I really didn't know who I was and I didn't know how I felt about things. The way we come up with character defects, of course, is going through the steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, 4 being the opportunity to inventory them and come up, inventory our lives and actions and come up with a list of traits that possibly need to be addressed. So my first few inventories in OA were, life used to be horrible, but it's great now, thank you, God. My mother did a bad job of raising me, but I've forgiven her for it. My brother and sister used to beat me up, but I love them and accept them unconditionally, blah, blah, blah. And I really meant it from the bottom of my heart, but it really took many, many more years for me to really experience fear. When everyone else talked about being in fear at the meetings, I thought, God bless them. I know that must be hard, but I'm not afraid of anything. You know, I trust God. And I really felt that way. So my story in a way is relapse. I never quit coming, but I certainly could get away with overeating just enough so that it kept the edge off, and I couldn't ever feel much peace about my food plan or my way of eating, because even though I knew that it didn't work for me to eat candy, I really didn't want to stop eating it. So I could do pretty well for a while, but then I'd have some sugar-free candy and, you know, then another and another and the whole package. And have you ever had a whole package of sugar-free candy? And makes you really sick. And then I'd have to go for the main stuff. You know, well, that'd make me really sick too. But anyway, so I discovered many years down the road that really kept me from knowing myself real well. We always talk about the layers of that darn onion, peeling things away and getting to know oneself. But, you know, it certainly is true. It certainly is true. So I did have periods where I lost probably the top amount of weight I've lost was 40 pounds. I'm 25 years older than I was when I came into program. So what I weigh, a normal healthy weight is 15 pounds more than it was back then. But I was only down to my bottom weight for 5 minutes anyway, so I hardly counted. I suppose, so I came into program and I just totally embraced it in every way and, was on a wonderful pink cloud stage for quite a while. When I came to step six, I said, of course I'm ready to have my defects of character removed. Who isn't? And just went on working with the steps and I did a spiritual fanaticism stage, and my children still think that I'm like that, you know, and so if I swear around them or something, even though they are mature adults, they are still shocked. But I did find a middle ground after getting excessively involved in every spiritual thing I could find. And, but it, you know, it kept me from looking more closely at myself and my relationships. Well, 10, so I've been abstinent for 6 years. So 15 years into program, I admitted that I had done everything I could possibly do to make my marriage work, you know, on my own. This is my opinion. I was the only one working on my marriage, and I had to try everything I could. But I finally admitted that it wasn't an accident that I couldn't stay abstinent living with a practicing alcoholic. And my program friends supported me in that. So after I left my marriage, it took about 3 years for me to deal with the grief of the loss of my fantasy of being a happily married woman for the rest of my life to this one man. And I did overeat during that time. But then when the dust settled and I really jumped into getting to know myself as a mature woman in recovery, all of a sudden I got abstinent and stayed abstinent. Okay, so my abstinence is 3 meals a day, 1 snack, and no desserts. So why does this work today? Why did this start working 6 years ago and not 25 years ago? I don't know. But if it looks like a dessert, sounds like a dessert, people treat it like a dessert, it's a dessert and I don't eat it. It doesn't matter if it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever time. And that's working for me. That's a really generous food plan parameter, and I have peace about it. My goal is healthy eating, lots of salads, lots of veggies. I'm not there yet, but that is my goal. So what I noticed happened after I stuck to this plan, and it was just me at home, and all my grown kids have come and gone, but mostly it's just me and the dog. And I noticed that I did get to know myself on a lot deeper level. All of a sudden, fear arose in my life, and I was terrified, and I woke up in the morning terrified. Well, fortunately, I have been paying attention all these years at meetings when you've all been talking about fear. So what did it make me do? Well, it made me pray more. It made me pray passionately on my knees. It made me meditate more. Okay, let's get that prayer corner spruced up, you know, put new stuff on it, bought some meditation music, you know, and I am actually, since I got this topic emailed to me earlier in the week, I have been meditating every morning and every night. So, you know, this is a wonderful way of turning a character defect into an asset. my fear that I had absolutely nothing to say about this topic caused me to draw a lot passionately, a lot closer to my higher power, a lot more passionately. That's a really good thing. The time that I spend, my fear mostly seems to be focused on my job. And that means I wake up in the middle of the night, oh my gosh, I'm taking those seniors on that trip on Friday. Where the heck are the bathrooms at the park? You know, just anything I can think of that means, you know, I can't do my job well enough. They are going to find out that even though I've had it for 9 years, I really am not capable of doing it, and they're going to fire me. You know, who cares about my job at 2 o'clock in the morning? You know, I'll deal with it tomorrow. But the terror is so real. So part of my job is taking seniors on day trips, usually once a week. It's a big responsibility. It's a big responsibility. My goal, of course, is to do it perfectly. And that's never going to happen. So if I'm just terrified until we get back from the trip, you know, I feel like I'm doing my part. So what do I have to do? I have to be sure and go to the bathroom before the bus leaves because I have such a nervous stomach. So I do that, and I just pray, God, get us to the first stop. Just, you know, I don't want to be here. This is too hard. Get me to the first stop. Oh, we made it to the first stop. Thank you, God. Okay, just get me to the lunch stop, you know. It none of it matters. I do a really good job. The seniors really like me. My boss gives me, you know, good evaluations, but the terror is real. So it manifests in a lot of ways. I don't understand it, but I just go to more meetings. And so this character defect, I'm praying to have it removed, and I'm willing to do whatever I can think of until it passes. I just mentioned perfectionism. That's a big challenge of mine, keeps me immobilized. I don't want to do whatever it is at all because I can't do it good enough. Everyone knows you should take an hour walk every day, or maybe 3 or 4 times a week, but it should be an hour really to count. For months and months, I took no walks. There was no way I wanted to walk for an hour. It was cold. It was dark. It was wet. I was tired. And so for some reason, I'll tell you what it was. I became willing to take short walks. Okay, what happened was my sister bought a Wii thing, you know, whatever you call it. Okay, I was at her house. You've got to try this fitness program on the Wii. I don't want to. I don't like that stuff. You've got to try it. You've got to try it. So, all right, she was recovering from surgery, which is why I was at her house. You know, let's humor the sick lady. So I get on the board. What does it do? You put in your age or your height or something, and it tells you are overweight. I was shocked. I was devastated. I couldn't think about the fitness program. I couldn't think about how to lean, where to point the thing. You know, I just kept saying to my sister, it says I'm overweight. It says I'm overweight. I have been praying passionately for 25 years in OA. You know, God, help me to be grateful and satisfied that I'm a normal weight, or show me how to eat and exercise differently today. And I thought I had a lot of serenity and acceptance around that, but the Wii said I was overweight. Oh, it just made me sick. Made me sick. So then, not 2 weeks later, I get an email. So I work for a city parks department, and so the superintendent of parks sends us these regular, you know, letters to the staff, and he's got this little spiel about how we are representatives of fitness in the community, and the state of Washington has one of the highest body mass fat indexes in the whole country. And so click on this little thing and it will tell you what your body mass index is. I think that's the right thing I'm saying. Okay. Okay. Now I thought, well, I can't do that because it's in some other kind of measurement and not maybe in kilograms or something instead of pounds, but no, they have a conversion thing. So I put it on there, you know, and it says I'm overweight. It says I'm overweight. I don't have the body mass index. I'm like a couple points. So I kept putting in numbers till I could find the one that put me in the normal category. You know, okay, I lose 5 pounds. I'll be in the highest mark of the category. Okay, so I said, now what does this have to do with character defects? Okay, so I trust my higher power to lead me back to that. So I remembered that I had heard this radio program where the guy said, if you eat 5 bites less of each meal at the end of a year, you will lose 10 pounds. And I already told you that I've been praying regularly for years, you know, for the willingness to exercise and eat what I need to end up weighing what God wants me to weigh, because it's never going to be the right number for me. And so the walking thing. So then I thought, have I talked very much about character defects? So I said, I will walk the dog for 5 minutes. I didn't tell you that I did join a gym last year, and I attended faithfully for 1 month, and then I spent 11 months feeling guilty that I was paying the membership and not going. And so I made the decision with some support to cancel the membership. So I really felt like, well, since I'm overweight according to Wee, and I'm overweight according to my boss, mass body index is too high, then I'd be willing to walk for 15 minutes a day, and the dog really needs the walks anyway. So I started with 15 minutes a day, and pretty soon it was 30. And then my daughter called and said, let's walk a long walk on Wednesday nights. And we really needed some bonding time. So we're doing that. I lost 10 pounds without even trying. It didn't take me a year. I was flabbergasted. How many times I've really wanted to lose weight and tried really hard and it never happened. So I'm going to say that moderation is what happened here. Moderation and sanity. I don't know. I don't think it's an accident that I have been given just by working the program as hard as I can, which is the tools we've all been hearing about all last night and today, the working through the steps, using all of the opportunities. I can't do this alone. Absolutely not. And working with a sponsor and Partners in Recovery, listening to the people I sponsor who are desperate and passionately working their programs, and they are you know, lighting the path for me. And that's what enables me to stay out of the food one day at a time the best I can, and to honestly show up and look at myself. And so, I mean, everybody knows, I guess the one thing I did decide I was going to say to you is that concept of taking the opposite. Like, I came up with faith when I looked at fear. You know, fear is one of my defects. What's faith? So then I described the ways that I build faith, looking to feed myself spiritually in any way that I could. The perfectionism. Every quarter I have the same set of reports that are due. You know, 9 years, the same quarterly reports, and every quarter I procrastinate them. Every single quarter I procrastinate them. They're not going to be done well enough. I don't remember how to look up the formulas because I only do them once a quarter. And so then I end up being the only one out of six coworkers, you know, who always has them late. So what do? I make a plan. I make a plan. How am I going to do this differently next time? Write it on the calendar, you know, 6 weeks ahead. Today we gather these figures. Next week we gather. I've just tried all kinds of things that I've been willing to do with varying degrees. But, you know, that's everyday life, is how do I get through what's on my schedule today and do it with integrity and do it better than I did it last time. Okay, so perfectionism, procrastination, fear, those are the biggest things. Gossip, you know, gossip, it's one of my favorite old defects. Most of the time I'm able to keep my mouth shut and smile and walk away if I need to, not participate in things that are hurtful, especially in the workplace. If I have to talk trash about someone, I find a safe person to do that with, you know, like a program friend, and so that I can process it through without having it go any further. What takes more courage for me is drawing boundaries and saying to somebody, like to confront the coworkers who are talking trash about somebody and say, not just to walk away from it, but to say, I'm really not interested in hearing someone talked about in that way in my office. That's a hard thing for me to do. But I'm asking for lots of help. So, I don't know. I feel as though I cannot adequately convey the enormous blessings that I have in my life today just by coming back and showing up the best that I could, which hasn't been too good at times, but you know, but I have this amazing life right now that I just can't believe the harder I work on those really deep down hurtful things that always turn out very sweet when I go through to the other side of them, and that, you know, and the steps are the answer. You know, it's not just coming up with the defects, but it's sharing them with a strong program friend, sponsor, or partner in recovery. It's making the amends, you know, looking at what's my part in it, taking it through the amends, living amends have always been the biggest part of my amends, because I was always the hardest on myself. And then doing the maintenance work, like the daily 10 steps, so I can have things stay molehills instead of mountains. So thank you very much for listening. I think I'm done. I'd like to introduce Cindy, our next speaker.
I'm Cindy, a compulsive overeater, and I'll tell you, I'm not getting a wee. But thank you for that information. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm Cindy. I'm a compulsive overeater. I still am a compulsive overeater. I'm very grateful to be part of this fellowship and to be here at this convention and to be among my own kind. It means a lot. I'm maintaining, or my higher power is maintaining a 70-pound weight loss for me. But more importantly, today I'm living with purpose, and I'm living life on life's terms instead of my terms. I don't do that all the time. I don't turn it over all the time, but I try to. And I know that God has the answer if I allow Him to have it. My abstinence date, that date which God started doing for me what I could not do for myself, is 5/15/05. I think He knew I had a bad memory too, so that date is pretty good for me. This is kind of a hard time of day to sit around. I feel like we should all be doing the hokey pokey or standing up and stretching or something. I've known since my early childhood that food did something for me what nothing else could do for me. It filled that shy, empty child with confidence. It helped me live in fantasy. It helped me escape, but it also killed me spiritually and physically. I was that fat child, and I was no longer accepted in society, really. And it was always, I was always the elephant in the room, you know, literally, often. And I was ridiculed not only by my peers, but some of my family, too. And it just wasn't an easy time. I would overeat, eat large quantities of things, and then they'd be missing. You know, that'd be pointed out to me that I was the only one home to have disposed of them. So anyway, it was a hard time. I appeared rather normal through a lot of my life, but I didn't feel normal. I never felt normal. I knew the secret that I was not acceptable and that I was deeply flawed. About 20 years ago, I came to OA. And I didn't stay. I live in a small town on the southern Oregon coast, and it's so small that we have a stoplight for about every 500 people that live there. But we had meetings start, and then people would move away, and they would fold. And it never dawned on me that I was worth keeping the meeting open for, just me and the fact that maybe somebody else would come. So finally, two real special ladies started a meeting in 1999, and I started going to that meeting. I really did not get it, but I kept going to the meetings because I knew that's where I belonged, that I needed to go back. Well, my first thought about character defects was, well, I don't have any character defects. I'm not that bad of a person. I was delusional, yes. Our literature refers to the fact that these character defects I had no clue about had at one time been useful to us, had helped us survive. Somewhere along the line, just like the eating and the food and the diets and everything else that was part of my behavior, the defects became a detriment. They ruined my relationships with others, my life in general, my chances for healthy relationships with other people were almost nil. So my big question was, how do we rid ourselves of character defects? And of course we don't. God does that for us if we work the program and we work the steps. And on page 84, earlier today I was in a session where somebody read the promises. And on page 84, after the promises, we have step 10 starts. And it says, we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I believe that all of this, setting the stage for this, starts with step one, but the seventh step prayer, which I try to read every day along with a third step prayer, is really the thing that starts me thinking about my defects for that day. My Creator, I am not willing that you should have all of me. I am now willing. Boy, I've got a little more self-will than I thought. And also, I don't type very well. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Does it get any clearer than that we're supposed to be good to other people, that we're supposed to do God's work and we're supposed to be fit to do it and turn around and help others? Every day I do a 10th step. I do an AEIOU format, and I think most of you know that format. If you don't, you can talk to somebody afterwards, but that kind of puts things in perspective with me. I turn this over. I used to just write it in a journal. Now I turn it over to somebody that lives 200 miles from me, who I found on a list for OA and is now one of my dearest people to me. She never says anything really, you know, if I ate something I shouldn't or if I did something I shouldn't, she's not going to come down on me, but I come down on myself. I don't want to admit those defects. I don't want to admit that I've been grumbling about the neighbor because he's anal. And why am I so upset about the neighbor that's anal? I mean, he mows his lawn when it gets that, and he has my big pet peeve is the leaf blower because he uses it in all weather, you know. And my husband always says, I said, hear that? You know, it's like I just bristle, you know, and he says, no. And so I have to write that down a lot of times every night, and I have to pray for that person. And I try to make a point of praying for all of my neighbors, even if I don't see them or I'm not close to them. I think that's really important for me because it keeps that anger or that resentment at bay. Instead of selfishness, I try to demonstrate interest in others. That's not always easy to do. Instead of fear, I try to have faith and trust in God. Fear is a big one. I can be afraid over anything. Afraid I'm not going to get here. I was afraid I wasn't going to get here on time this morning. I was afraid I wouldn't know anybody. I was afraid. And it works out so much better when I turn it over to God. And I just put one foot in front of the other and just go. Dishonesty. I think of myself as an honest person, but then I start seeing some of the things when I write them down at night. Oh, I didn't write down that maybe that I had a little more of something than I should have, or I did a certain thing. So honesty is a big thing. And I think in general, we want to be dishonest. We don't want to, but you know, it's easy to be dishonest. Resentment. The opposite would be forgiveness. I have to forgive everyone for what they do, for what I do. And the list goes on a little bit, and maybe I will go on with it a little bit because I have more time than I thought I did. Being inconsiderate, I need to try to be considerate. Greed, I need to be more giving and sharing. Sloth and procrastination, I need to take the right action. I need to take action. Impatience. I wouldn't think I'm very impatient, but I am. And so patience is the opposite of that, and I need to practice that more. Self-pity. Self-forgetfulness. I can have a great pity party. If you ever want to come to one of my pity parties, just let me know. We won't have a good time for sure. But if you come, maybe I'll forget myself. self-condemnation. Boy, I could get that messed up pretty good. You know, I'm really the hardest on myself more than anybody else would be. Doubt is a big one. I've had times in the last few years, I had to make a real, I had to be willing to give up. And that's a very hard thing for me to do. But when I gave up, I started having physical recovery. And I gave up on my career, and I kept thinking, I just can't do this anymore. And if I continue to do this, I'm going to die. But of course, I still wanted to continue to do it. You know, I didn't care about too much about dying because, you know, pride is greater than dying. So there were a couple of things that I've read that I think really hit me between the eyes. One of them was an AA tape CD, and this woman said, I think this is the true litmus test. When you go to bed at night, she says, I pray that God will have people treat me tomorrow like I treated people today. And so when I think about that, I think that is really profound and awesome. There's a quote also from the Lifeline, from HL in the 2004 Lifeline. And it says, I need to do a 10th step every day, even before I reach it within the program, to stay honest with others and myself. The 10th step means I clear away the day and open up tomorrow with no regrets, no guilt. And I know that I'm a little short after, but I think that about says it all. And so if anybody would like to share, you can line up and come on up. Thank you.
I'm Holly. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm so glad that Cindy had us was talking about the seventh step prayer. Love the seventh step prayer. It's part of my daily spiritual disciplines to say that. I made a change personally to the way I say the seventh step prayer. And one thing I do, it says, I'm willing that you should have, that you should remove all these See, now, if I start in the middle, I can't. My creator, I'm willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, strong and weak. It helps me so much to not look at when I don't measure up, it's because I'm bad. Now, I mean, I do some bad things sometimes. Sometimes I choose to do the selfish thing, but sometimes it's merely weakness, and so I ask for strength. So I always add strong and weak there. And the last part where I ask for strength, or I ask him to remove all defects of character that stand in the way of my usefulness to others. And after years of saying this prayer every day, I realized I'm not asking God to remove all my weaknesses. Only the ones that stand in the way of my usefulness to others. That's how I felt when I thought of that. Oh, it's like I always thought, you know, if when God removes all my defects of character, I'll be an excellent housekeeper. I will win that gold medal, you know. I've come to believe that if God gave each of us everything that we need in order to live a happy life, we would never need anyone else. And I think that we're created for community so that we each have our strengths, we each have our weaknesses. And where I am weak, I am to admit I'm weak and ask someone who has a strength in that area for help. This is not a character defect. This is a weakness that may or may not be removed from me, but only if it stands in the way of my usefulness to others. And sometimes my admitting of weakness is more useful to others than my than if God were to strike me, boom, poof, you're a great housekeeper. Sometimes it's more useful for people to come in and see my house the way it is because it makes them feel so much better about the way their house is. Sometimes that's the work God wants to do. So I wanted to share that with you. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Pauline, and I'm a compulsive overeater. You should be quite happy that your weed just said you were overweight. Mine said you are obese. And I said, and you're a cheap piece of plastic, too, that costs too much. Anyway, I just found my character defects since I came into OA. I didn't think I had any. But I am a control freak. I raised five children on my own, or basically on my own. And I did so only with my higher power's help. But at the time, I used to do things and say, thank you, but what do you think about it? You know, like I wouldn't admit that I wasn't in control. I've learned to admit that I'm not in control, that a higher power is. And that's what helped me 100% with my program in the last year since I've come to that conclusion. I also had a good lesson lately because my oldest daughter, who has three children and a full-time job and is like me, trying to do everything on her own, started to annoy me, and I realized it was like looking in the mirror. I was seeing a mirror image of myself, trying to be a control freak, and I was able to stand back and say, okay, I understand now. So, Anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Tracy. I'm anorexic and bulimic. Hi, Tracy. Grateful to be here. My sponsor says I belong here, so I take her word for it. My low self-esteem, however, tells me maybe I don't, because I've only been in program for 5 months. Been blessed with abstinence since my first meeting. God did that. I guess the reason that I feel I don't belong is because my biggest character defect is low self-esteem. It is the thing that made me starve myself, over-exercise, take laxatives, focus only on numbers, what I weighed. If I got to that number, then people would like me. And if I was at that number, people wouldn't like me anymore. My dream was to become a fitness instructor. I wanted to be Jane Fonda. That was it. That's all I wanted for me. And I finally got there at age 40. Had plastic surgery. Ate only 12 Doritos a day. Worked out for hours upon hours. And still wasn't happy. Still didn't love me. Couldn't love other people. Hated myself. Lied to people about how I got to where I was. People asked me all the time, what do you eat? How do you look the way you look? And it was all lies. Every time I was up there teaching a class, it was a lie. When I couldn't make myself throw up, I was so mad at myself that I couldn't make myself throw up. That was my rock bottom, when I was crying into a toilet bowl. And that night I went to bed and I prayed to God. I said, you know, I've been mad at you forever because you haven't been helping me. And help me now. And the next day I went to a meeting online, and I've been abstinent ever since. So what I've been hearing over and over today from people with years and years and years of experience in this program is it works if you work it and you're worth it. I'm worth it. I belong here. Yeah, it's only 5 months, one day at a time. So I'm worthy. So low self-esteem turns into self-worth. So grateful to be here, and just want to say, I'm somebody. And so are you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Patricia from Missoula. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. Missoula's in Montana, where you all will be next year at this time. We're hosting the 2010 Region 1 Convention and Assembly, which happens to be the year of OA's 50th anniversary. So this is important. So y'all come. Okay. I was thinking that one of the best ways I can turn my character defects to benefit or to usefulness, you know, in God's plan, is to take other people's inventory. It's true. And it's what I heard here already tonight, you know. Because I believe what I heard when I first got here, that if you spot it, you got it. And when I'm taking your inventory, that reminds me, or my higher power reminds me, that I have to look at myself and say, why is that bugging you? You know, what is there about you that's such a big deal? And I have to write about that usually and find out, because if it's really obvious, you know, I can just say, there I am again, which is the way I work the seventh step. But so then I write that inventory out. I find out what my character defects are, and then I share it with other people, like in this kind of a setting or at a meeting with people that I sponsor. And that's a really good way to make use of character defects, because it gives me some stories. And that's what we do here, is we tell our stories, right? So if I didn't have character defects, I wouldn't have any good stories. So thanks for being here. I'm glad to be here.
Hi, I'm Diana, compulsive eater. I just want to say that I do not believe in character defects. You know, it's such a negative term, and really what we call character defects is just, you know, like when we grew up, we didn't learn we learned dysfunctional ways of behaving. You know, it's what we call character defects is really just, it's a result of damage done to us. And I know we all want to improve and get better and be nicer and more considerate. But I have to think, in my mind, I can't use that phrase, character defect. What's wrong with you? You know, and because that speaks to that same old put myself down, you know. Remember, the big book was written by a lump bunch of men. Really, you know, and men have a different, with all due respect to men. But I just think women who are addicts, you know, I just think that we need some lifting up and not just, okay, I'm going to pound it through. And I just, so as a woman, I need to phrase it as a way to lift myself up so that those things that are wrong with me, you know, my sarcasm or, you know, my inappropriate communication, this isn't one of the times, but I mean, that's what I've had trouble with at work plenty of times, just being such a, just throw sarcastic comments out or throw things out that are not appropriate in the office. But it's a result of self-protection from childhood. And not as an excuse, but I need to dive down into that. Like, where did that come from? Why am I being such an asshole? You know, because it protects me, that vulnerable, soft part of me. And it did, I protected myself from my older brothers that way. It never worked. They still abused me. I tried to be a tomboy like them, and they still hated me, and they still treated me like crap. So I guess that's my statement, is that I have to think of it more like, you know, my character defect is part of me that hasn't blossomed. You know, it's just tight in the bud, that part of me. And I, you know, so what can God do to make it go like this? That's it.
Let's close with the seven-step prayer. Have you been in sessions where they've closed with prayers?
Oh, yeah.
My sessions haven't. Okay. It says right here, close with a prayer. All right, the seven-step prayer.